Which you could legally do, by the way.
What?
He could legally change his name. You've been committed. You've committed a felony.
You ready?
Yeah.
Sorry, I put the wrong bumper music on.
Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else, close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode, second hour, of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake.
McClure. Second hour.
Second hour.
Second hour. Which is 1 hour more than the first hour, and is very confusing because the beginning hour was actually hour zero, and this is actually hour one.
I think that there is... discrimination against the number 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, but 7, 8, 9.
Well, the number 1, 2, and 3, you'll notice that when you're talking about them, 1 becomes first. That doesn't even have anything to do with 1. Just first. And 2 becomes second, which again, the number is not even mentioned in its own. These are supposed to be high prizes, and the number is ignored. And third is a little bit like 3 with an RD, and all the others get the TH after them. So that you get, you know, 5th is 5 with a TH, and 4th.
And you can drink one.
6th, yeah, and you can drink one. And so I think there's some clear discrimination happening in the world against the first 3 numbers. See, I even used the word first. I used a discriminatory word to describe them, and that tells you.
You know, those numbers could wind up reporting you.
Yes, because I have great discrimination in my numbers.
You've been discriminating against those numbers, abusing
right.
those numbers.
Abusing them horribly.
Right. And for the first year, a child is, see, first.
First. But for the first year, the child's not even 1.
That's the point. The kid is 0.
And we still call it their first year.
We still say it's year 1, but they're 0.
See, our math is all messed up from the beginning.
It's kind of like, I know somebody who is about to turn 42, but she's been going through her 42nd year all year. And at the end of it, she'll be turned 42. And in her 43rd year, during the entire year, she'll say she's 42.
Yeah.
This is very confusing.
It's true.
And I can't even know what, I mean, yesterday, my birthday is coming up in the very near future. Actually, the anniversary of my birth date is coming up in the very near future.
Yeah,
my birth date was a long time ago.
You're being born again.
Yes. That's an interesting thought. And I was very confused as to how old I am. I'm always very confused as to how old I am because I should be 1 year younger than I am reported to be, or 1 year older than I'm reported to be, and it just is very confusing.
Except that you can't count a fractional year like you can a Bitcoin.
They can. Yeah, they're called months.
So you should measure yourself in months. That's the solution, except that for the entire first month, you're still not a month old.
Well, you could measure yourself in nanoseconds.
That would be the perfect solution, and this is how the metric system was born.
Well, I want to talk about the stock market again for a minute. Everybody, I think, that is not semi-somnolent or somnolent is aware of the fact that we've seen some pretty amazing gains in the stock market over the last year. It's worth remembering, though, that not very long ago, the world was about to come to its end.
Which end?
Like about a year ago. Because the Chinese economy was going to collapse and the price of oil had dropped and all kinds of terrible things
happened. Oh, yes. That was the scare of the moment. Yes.
Right. But we've run out of scare. Actually, what's happened is I think we've been inoculated. The president has done a very good job of inoculating us to sensational announcements.
Yeah, if that were not the case, every time North Korea said, I'm going to launch a nuclear weapon, which we have already proven multiple times that we have, the entire world would gasp in terror and say, let's invade or do something to stop them. As it is, people don't even really...
You don't even pay attention.
They just change on to the next piece of celebrity news. Kim Jong-un has announced today that he's going to launch on Guam. And in other news, Angelina Jolie is having a spat with Brad Pitt.
I am convinced that President Trump has not stopped tweeting astonishingly many cases untrue things.
That's the definition of what Twitter is.
Well, but it used to be that it would make headlines every time he did that, and
right.
now
it's just like, okay, you tweeted again.
I don't even get he tweeted again because I don't know. I don't even the Wall Street Journal, at least in its headlines, is no longer reporting presidential tweets as being news.
Right. I guess if you do it enough, people stop listening.
And they don't. And I haven't heard anything that Kim, what is his name?
Kim Jong-un.
Kim Jong-un has said recently. I'm sure he's still making pronouncements,
too. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that. They repeated. He didn't say it exactly. Somebody in his group said that they were going to launch on Guam because we just, 2 days ago, flew a bunch of strategic bombers from Guam over South Korea as part of an exercise. Right. So he said, well, then somebody in my group will say that we are going to launch on Guam.
Yeah. And it doesn't even make headlines anymore.
No. And it really didn't make that big a headline that we were flying strategic nuclear-capable bombers over Korea.
If something of all this rhetoric actually happens, obviously it will have a temporary negative effect on the market. Yeah. And probably a long-term positive effect, because it is bad and as nasty it is, strictly from an economics point of view. If North Korea decided to launch a nuclear weapon at the United States, they probably couldn't get it to do, know that it would do a reentry. So they do have the capability of doing an electromagnetic pulse. Probably could get to the West Coast or Hawaii, do an electromagnetic pulse, and damage a lot of electronic equipment. That would be, it would be very unpleasant in that a lot of people would probably die as a result, because we would go to war. At least I think we'd go to war. But from an economics point of view, it'd be wonderful, because the economy would surge, because we'd have to spend a lot of money. We have to borrow a lot of money and spend a lot of money. We'd get a lot of money that's just sitting there doing nothing, out of the doing nothing and into making war stuff. But
I've got to do a bunch of numbers on the economy here.
Okay, well, I want to do something on the stock market, but you can do the economy first.
All right. There's a bunch of good stuff in the economy. A lot of good news came out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with the least good of the news. So the ISM Manufacturing Index.
Mm-hmm.
It's an index that's tracking supply-side manufacturing. How much is being manufactured now?
What's the ISM?
ISM is the Institute for Supply Management.
Yes. You're very good.
Thank you.
Give me a point for that.
Yes. They have an index, and the index, if it's above 50, means we're expanding. More orders are coming in for supplies, for manufacturing. Mm-hmm. If we're less than 50, then we're contracting. So in September, the number was at 68 or 61.
Which is good.
Which is good. In October, it was at 58.7. So the headline is ISM Manufacturing Index declines to 58.7. But that 58.7 is like a 17.4% growth in manufacturing.
Anticipated.
So that's the least good news, because October was not as good as far as new growth from September. We've got personal income rose in September by 0.4%. Well, whoop-de-doo, 0.4%, except that if you multiply that per month, what you see is a very nice increase in income. It's close to a 5% increase over the year.
Can I throw in one more?
Yeah.
We've been complaining a lot about productivity non-growth.
Yep.
Over the last month, productivity in the United States grew 3% on an annualized basis.
Yes, that's non-farm productivity grew 3% as an annual rate.
We just kept on doing that. We had 3% productivity growth for the rest of the year.
And that is fantastic.
Except for the fact that the month before there was a hurricane, and it probably affected
it. Yes, it probably affected it in that a lot of people coming back to work have a big backlog of things that they have to do. They tend to work a little bit harder to get through the backlog, so you get a little productivity increase. They can't work at that speed forever. Well, if you have a large enough whip.
I think
labor laws prohibit whipping your employees.
We have been waiting on a productivity acceleration generated by robotics.
Yes, and I think we're starting to see that.
And that may, you know, anytime we see this, we think, okay, here it is. And then it kind of,
I showed you a video, which is very difficult to show on the radio, but it had to do with the new robotics that are out there. There was a conference in Germany with a lot of different types of robotics on display from all kinds of different places, and the prices are coming down, and the usability and features are going up.
When you get done with your numbers, I got two things.
Okay. So you threw in the non-farm productivity, which is cool. Non-farm payrolls. We added 261,000 jobs in October.
Yay! And we also changed revised last month from a 33,000 loss to an 18,000 gain.
Okay, here's one that's been big in the news as far as people complaining about it. Our trade deficit in goods and services, the things that we buy and sell from the rest of the world. And a lot of people look at it and say, if we're buying more than we're selling, then that's not good. Except that every time I go to Amazon, I buy a lot more than I sell to them. So it's
obviously not good.
anyway, for our purposes, what happened? Exports last month, or September, rose by $2.1 billion. So that's a pretty good number. We sold $2.1 billion more last month in September than we did the month before. That's really, really nice. And we were just talking last hour about the Bitcoin, and there's been about $2 billion invested in the Bitcoin, and it's a mania. People are all excited about it. Well, we last month in the United States, we exported $2.1 billion more than we did the month before. The other side of it is that we imported $2.8 billion more than we imported the month before.
Which is perfectly all right. The trade deficit is, like some other things in economics, fictitious.
And here's this is part of the proof that it's fictitious. That $2.8 billion in imports was led by petroleum products. So think about that. Our oil here in the United States is a lot less expensive than the oil that's being sold across Europe and Asia. The only reason why petroleum products are imported to the United States is because we have some demand in a very localized area. But the reality is the vast majority of petroleum imports are for refining. We refine it here and quite often turn around and sell it back elsewhere or here.
At a higher price.
At a higher price.
And sometime when we have lots of time, I'll go into why the trade deficit is fictitious. And yeah. I don't mean a theory. I'm talking about pretty good proof.
Yeah, there's a lot of proof behind that. And so then the non-manufacturing, we talked about manufacturing index. The non-manufacturing index in October was at 60.1. We were expecting, the consensus expectation was 58. 50 means we're not growing and not shrinking. Anything above 50 is growing. Anything below is shrinking. That is the equivalent of a 20% increase in expectations from a flat from the year before. So that's important, and that is basically everything that doesn't have to do with manufacturing. The outlook is service sector activity growing at its fastest pace since 2005.
All right, you're listening to Person and Wealth Coach. Telephone number in here is 254-773-1400 if you want to join us. I got a couple of things I want to say.
Okay.
Big effect, there's two big effects that I think long-term we'll see in a change in the tax code based on the proposal.
Okay.
If it passes.
So it's a big if.
Okay. Number one, and this is going to be long-term, if you read the history books 30 years from now, this, in my opinion, will be the biggest one. The Republicans' leadership, Republicans in Congress in general, have agreed that it's a really good idea to increase the federal deficit by, including interest, about $2 trillion over the next 10 years. Now, I realize they said it'll increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion, but since you got to borrow the $1.5 trillion and then pay interest on it over the long term, that's like at least $2 trillion. Trillion. Now, we're not talking about small amounts of money here, okay?
And let's throw this out there, too. This is really well accepted practices, but they're still based on pure guesswork as far as revenue to the government, because new types of taxes and new methods of taxation aren't very easily predicted.
Yeah, I've heard claims, and I accept that the claims are there, that, hey, theoretically, hopefully, if we reduce taxes, it'll increase business activity enough that we'll get enough tax revenue to make up the difference.
And that's a possibility.
It's certainly a possibility. It's just that there have been three times in recent history, relatively recent history, going back about 40 years,
mm-hmm.
where that exact theory has been put into effect. Now, you could say, well, circumstances prevented it from working in each case. But in each case, what we wound up was a bigger deficit and a bigger debt and lower tax revenue.
Right. And then the George W. Bush tax cuts, which we were all for, resulted in a much larger deficit because yep. then, as you said, well, you could argue that there are outside things. Well, we went to war with two countries and we didn't change our right. expenses went way up and we didn't change
right.
our revenue model.
And we had a major, major recession. But again, the assumption in when they say $1.5 trillion, they're assuming over the next 10 years we have no recessions. And I have a lot of trouble accepting that as a certainty.
It's been a long time since we've gone 20 some odd years without a recession.
I don't know that we've ever gone 20 some years.
Okay. We had a recession 10 years ago. If we go another 10 years without a recession, it may be
then
that
we'll break some massive
records. Yeah, those are big records to break. So it's likely at some point in the near future, near being 3 yeah. to 10 years, that we'll have a recession. What will cause it? Well, what always causes recessions?
So the
oversupply, under demand.
In the long term, perhaps one of the two biggest effects of this bill, if it passes and becomes law, will be that about 10 to 15 years from now, we will hit the wall on debt and pay the price. And that will be, by any measure that I can imagine in my wildest dreams and speculation, unpleasant.
And there are people that talked to me about this and say things like, you guys have for years talked about the debt of the United States not being as big as it's being reported, and now you're all anti-debt. Well, yes, both of those are true.
We're not anti-debt. We're just saying if you increase the debt that the government owes held by the public faster than the economy is growing,
you're going to have problems.
Eventually, you hit a wall.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of when. It's not a matter of if.
Yeah.
We got a caller?
Yes, we do.
We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with a personal wealth coach. Go ahead. Chris von Georgetown.
Welcome to the program.
Actually, it's Jorge Town. Go ahead. Yes. You hide the origin of the money.
Right.
It's dirty money, and you move it around in such a way that it looks like it's clean money. A
couple of years ago in Austin, there was a large series of nightclubs that were seized by the DEA and by the Treasury Department. There were 14 different nightclubs. And the nightclubs looked amazing. And had some people there in the evenings, not huge amounts. What was going on there was the people were indicted and then convicted on these charges, so I don't even have to use the word allegedly. There was a large cocaine and heroin smuggling business, which is cash-based. People would pay cash for heroin, for cocaine, because...
But they don't write checks and use credit
cards? put a memo. My drug guys raised his prices. They don't do that. So they're doing it in cash. Well, if this family, and it was a family in Austin, if they start depositing all this cash and they don't have some way to say this is where the money came from, then the IRS starts getting curious and the DEA starts getting curious, which they did anyway. So what they do instead is they set up these front businesses that they set up using money, oftentimes loaned against collateral on dirty money. So the Manafort thing, he had money from overseas and he got loans against that money and then paid the loans back.
$18 million,
not a big. So it's very similar here in that you take a loan against some money to buy a piece of property and you pay that loan back with money that you earn, use air quotes around the word earn, because you really, the whole idea here is to accept a bunch of cash that nobody paid you and use it to pay back the loan. So then you have the facility, and if you've got an income stream, that cash is coming into the business, and the business may have 10 customers, but you claim you had 400 customers. So when you're selling alcohol and things like that, there's a lot of times that money launderers will just dump alcohol down the drains to say a lot more people came and visited, because the alcohol folks come and look at your amount of alcohol. They want to make sure you're not watering it down. There's laws against that. So money laundering takes basically all you need to do to thoroughly money launder is to say this money came from an established source, and look, I paid taxes on it, or I didn't need to pay taxes on it because it came from some loophole or another, and therefore you have laundered money. It's a lot easier to money launder if you just take a wad of money and throw it in a washing machine. You haven't broken any laws by that kind of money laundering.
I don't know.
If you're going to money launder, I think that's the way you should do it.
You could say to the IRS, yes, I have this $1 million, but I found it in my washing machine.
Right. It was laundered money. It's very clean.
And since it was an unexpected find, I went ahead and paid taxes on it.
And several of the Batman movies, the butler for Batman, Bruce Wayne's butler, irons his $100 bills. So I would assume he's using starch, and that's a laundered process. So he's just walking around with laundered money.
Right. And oddly enough, did you see the movie The Wolf of Wall Street?
I haven't seen it yet.
This is the point. It was a money laundering vehicle. The money, you know, the money that came out of the movie, theoretically the movie was very profitable, but in fact it wasn't. It's theoretically the overseas sales of the DVDs and the shows and so on generated a huge amount of money for its investors. In fact, it didn't happen. It was just a vehicle to take illegal money from IMDb that had been stripped out of the Malaysian government, run it through this limited partnership that produced the movie, and then come out as huge profits from the movie that never really existed.
So anytime, and there's another way of, this is one we've talked about, that the Chinese have a method that's relatively new where they form a corporation in the United States. They get a small amount of money overseas. They're able to get it out there somehow. They form a corporation in the United States. This corporation orders from the owner corporation, the one that owns them. They make a big manufacturing order. Send me a bunch of stuff. Well, the order backfires, and the material that gets sent is junk. So they sue them in international court. So the company that is owned by the company that it is suing sues that company, and the money is awarded to this new company because obviously the contract was not followed. They got junk equipment, and that was a way of getting the money out of China and a way of cleaning the money, because the Chinese government does not want their currency leaving.
Because they turned the money over to the court in the United States.
Right.
Which under international treaties is part of the World Trade Organization, China has to allow that, then the court issues a check to the people. And, I mean, if it's in federal court, you get a check from the federal government. That's about as clean a money as I know you can get.
Right. So the idea of money laundering is just the legitimization of money that was not entirely legal if you look at the purpose and the method of acquiring.
Not entirely. Why would you want to launder it? No, you lose money laundering by definition.
You lose money in the process.
Is a money losing operation. It's one of the things that the feds look for. For example, a big deal, a way of laundering money is to come in, to go to the bank, let's say with a several banks with 5,000 or 7,000, because you have to report 10,000, five or seven or 10, just below $10,000 in cash. You buy a bunch of cashier's checks. Then you go to an annuity salesman and you buy a deferred annuity. Let's say you have $40,000 worth of these cashier's checks and you buy a deferred annuity for $40,000.
And then you immediately, in the free look period, go back and say, no, give me my money back. I didn't want this.
And then, so the insurance company then issues a check to the person who bought the annuity from the insurance company for $40,000. So now when he takes the $40,000 to the bank to deposit it, the person who bought the annuity has got a legitimate insurance company source for the money, and when it goes into the bank, it's clean money.
Now, before any of
But he can do that even if he doesn't do it during the free look period. A lot of times they're looking for that.
Right.
So they'll wait and they'll pay this like a 7% surrender charge to get out of the annuity and take the 7% loss and smile about it because it made the money clean.
Now, before any of the nefarious listeners out there go out and say, oh, here's what I'm going to do, there are ways of tracking even that. So we're getting better at finding obvious money laundering. It's taking more and more extreme versions of it where they actually really do start pretty legitimate businesses to make the money cleaner. And that gets harder and harder to do. And we went overboard with the Patriot Act. We gave the IRS the ability to seize bank accounts of people that they suspected as money laundering. Suspected, not proven. So there were quite a lot of small businesses that had large amounts of assets frozen and seized by the IRS, restaurant businesses and so on, that were depositing lots of groups of cash in less than $10,000 increments. And so they said, well, this is somebody's trying to avoid the $10,000 reporting number. That's just how much money they made. And it just happened to be that much. And so the IRS would seize it. Well, the Treasury Department has said that they're not going to be doing that anymore unless they have evidence of a crime. So the fact that they say, unless we have evidence of a crime, we won't do this, just goes to say they were doing it without evidence of a crime before, which is horrible. Anyway, okay. So money, go ahead.
I don't think the state of Texas has anything to do with it.
Yeah, it is the state of Texas. Yeah. What's going on here is that Texas has decided it's got some gold. It's one of the things that the legislature said, we've got a rainy day fund and we've got other surpluses. Where should we hold it? It's been holding gold, which has not been the best investment.
The Texas Bullion Depository.
Right. And the Texas Bullion Depository in 2015, they passed a law saying we need to have one because we're paying the Federal Reserve Bank of New York too much money to hold our gold. And so... Yeah, and so we had it. Texas had the gold already. It was just in New York. And if you remember the Die Hard movie, I think it was Die Hard 2, where they came back. How many foreign European ultra crime lords is this guy going to run into? Well, three, as the case was. Three on different times in his life, all barefoot.
Primarily, it is for the University of Texas Investment Management Company's gold endowment, which is worth an estimated $660 million, is currently stored in HSBC, New York Bank Vault, which they charge hefty storage fees. And so the University of Texas fund, which is part of what pays for the University of Texas, actually given a chunk of gold and said, you have to leave this in gold, but it's part of your endowment.
So basically they're gonna dig a very deep hole and put a lot of concrete and steel in the hole, and then they're going to put a lot of gold in the hole, and then
Yeah, but
somebody's job will be to look at the gold occasionally to make sure it's still there.
they actually took a look at this and said, wait a minute, if Hong Kong, Singapore, Bank of China, HSBC,
Right.
in New York is storing our gold in a vault and they're charging us this much to store it, man, if we opened up a big vault here
And that's the concept, is they want to
and
offer it as another place where people can store gold
we
as
could
well.
make some big bucks. You know, it's kind of like Bell County pushed hard and it was defeated in a bond issue, and then it went ahead and did it anyway, a different way, to build a bigger jail than they needed because other places had not built big enough jails, and they were renting out cell space for prisoners, and having other counties pay Bell County was a money-making operation. It's just, you just wouldn't, I mean, you know, it's a form, I guess it would be a form of gold laundering.
Right.
Yeah, anyway. Don't. No, it's not from the federal government, it's HSBC.
It's a Federal Reserve Bank. The HSBC has to follow the Federal Reserve standards, but
But
the
not for their gold storage.
for the gold storage as well. The Federal Reserve in New York has a arm that's just about gold storage. So the Dallas Federal Reserve is going to be involved in this storage as well. There are still some laws about bulk storage of bullion that fall under the Federal Reserve. Yeah. There's a well, yeah, I think so. I think the Treasury has something
Well,
there. I'm not.
technically, it's issued from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, but that
Yeah.
it isn't really printed there. It's printed in D.C.
They might have a mint
I
there.
don't think they actually print money there. Print money, you can check and see, but I think there used to be there was a separate printing press at each Federal Reserve Bank, but I think they've centralized it, and it's just the Federal Reserve Bank has to authorize the issue of currency. And if it, yeah. And I may be wrong on that, but I think they closed it down at some point. So thanks for calling, Chris.
Yeah, well, there's a Fort Worth tour of the Bureau of Engraving and Printing. So you could go to Fort Worth and
Yeah, but it's
there's a
not in Dallas.
self-guided tour. It's in Fort Worth, yeah.
Self-guided, do you get samples?
I have free samples available at the end. And the problem is that they charge a tax of 120%. Yeah, you. Woohoo! I will trade you a very good trade for you. I will give you 50 pennies for every dollar that you give me. It's a 50 to 1 trade. It's an amazing deal. Think of all of the multiplication that happens there. Thanks for the call, Chris.
And you're still listening to the Personal Wealth Coach.
We have some commercials to play for this hour.
You're right. Fort Worth, Texas. Great place to learn about U.S. currency. They actually print it in Fort Worth.
Yep. All right. We're going to play some commercials. We'll be back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring
Jeff and
and Jake McClure. The number to call in here is 254-773-1400.
I was so wrong. Over half of the nation's currency is produced in Fort Worth.
Paper and metal currency.
Yes, and the interesting thing is that it's not just from the Bank of Dallas. It's banks all over the United States, Federal Reserve banks all over the United States have it printed in Fort Worth.
It's a money laundering scheme. They're paying Dallas to do it for them.
No, they're paying Fort Worth.
They're paying Fort Worth to do it for them in the mint
It's a Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas,
that's
but it's
printing
being
it in Fort
printing
Worth.
in Fort Worth, which I think is a
I
conflict of
see
interest.
here. And are they paying taxes on that money?
That's what I was saying. What I was talking about is originally there was a printing press in Dallas, and I remember they shut it down, but they just opened up a regional one in Fort Worth.
Okay, so we've got some commercials to play, and we'll be back on the other side.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
McClure.
I was going to talk about.
We got a caller too.
We got a caller. Let's do the caller first, then I'll talk about.
Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yep. Well, it's a little bit complicated,
to say the least.
There's a buzzing in the background. I don't know if it's from you or from us, but there's it went down. The if you have a business that you work in that's a pass through, like a S corporation or an LLC,
or a partnership or a sole proprietorship,
right, then if it is in the merchandising or manufacturing or something business, then that business, it's assumed, we'll start off with the assumption that 70% of the money you get should be taxed as regular income, and 30% of the money should be taxed
as business income.
As business income.
With a tap rate of 25%.
Right. So they'll give you the 25% rate on that part.
Versus the 39.6 on income.
Yeah. So, 39, you'd have to be making, 39.6 bracket got raised way up there. You got to make $1 million a year to start the 39.6 bracket rather than where it was before. So,
right.
Your taxes probably will go down some unless you're in a service business. You're in a service business. Then,
What kind of businesses are they? Just as general as you want to be. Okay.
That's it. Then you're in the 70-30.
Now you'll be in the 70-30 area.
You can go in.
If it gets passed. If it goes anywhere.
And it gives you the opportunity to go in and say, no. My business is making a lot more money then I would reasonably get paid to manage this business. And here's what I would reasonably get paid to manage this business, and everything I get above that is in essence dividends. And the dividends should be taxed at the 25% rate, and the rest of my money gets taxed at the rate. But you'd have to fight them over
there. They don't call it dividends because the dividend side of taxes, this is just...
It's not really dividends.
It's the arbitrary nature of the tax code. They're calling the same kind of income different incomes for tax purposes, mm-hmm. which gets very complicated because they keep changing the definition.
Basically, they will treat 30% of the money you make as if it's corporate income, and the same as if you were if it was IBM or something.
Only IBM gets charged 20%, not 25%.
Right. You get 25, so it may help you, and it may not. It all depends on which way the wind's blowing tomorrow.
What it does say is that there on the surface of this appears to be the makings of a huge amount of money for attorneys and CPAs
right.
to set up your businesses perfectly to avoid all of the high income taxes.
You know what this bill is going to be called, have you heard?
Yeah.
it's the 2017 CPA Full Employment Act.
Right. Well, that's only for businesses and only for those that still wind up itemizing deduction. The majority of people will not need a CPA anymore.
Yeah, it's going to be, the funny thing is most businesses like yours that I know of, and I don't know that you do this, for example, if you have an LLC and it runs a quarry and you personally own the land that the quarry is on, and you lease the land to the quarry, that's taxed as business income today, and it would continue to be business income if you have a manager for it and you don't manage it.
Right.
If you don't manage your rental property. And anybody who has businesses and a good CPA is already doing most, so it's probably not going to affect your taxes much at all.
Right. See, then you have other issues.
Then,
and there's the question of how permanent this tax law is going to be versus others. There are a huge amount of people that have paid a much larger amount of money for estate tax planning. When the estate tax changes faster than anything else, and all the plans that many, many thousands of dollars were spent on suddenly become worthless or suddenly change into completely different things.
If you went to a C corporation, among other things, you'd wind up paying a franchise tax, anything, and it's the reverse of what you have with a pass-through. In a C corporation, you say, here's my salary, and I'm getting taxed at the regular income tax rate. And everything above that is corporate income, and therefore I shouldn't be taxed debt. Once again, you got to fight over that with the IRS saying, what is a reasonable salary, and show me why.
This is the next thing, is I would expect the IRS to start challenging conversions of corporate identities from, say, an S-corp or an LLC to a C-corp, because they would say, well, what reason did you have to do it? Your business was not bigger. You weren't looking at selling any of it. All of these questions. You were just doing it to avoid taxes.
But the big thing here is that
it's complexity.
Anything above a reasonable salary is dividends, and the corporation gets taxed.
It's not what the IRS is calling.
No, well, I'm talking about in a C corp.
Okay.
In a C corp, not an S corp, not an LLC. If you, let's say, made $1 million, you said I want to take it as salary, that's fine. They'll charge you 39.6 at the top. But the point is, if, let's just say, they say $200,000 is the maximum, or $250,000 is the maximum somebody would pay you to run this place, then that other $750,000 becomes dividends in a C corp. The corporation gets taxed at 20% on that set of dividends, but you get taxed at 35% after the corporation paid the 20%. So the C corp, this is where CPAs are going to be really, really busy. C corps pay out the dividend. That dividends are double taxed. This law did not change that. So when a corporation pays dividends, it pays taxes on the income. It's not deductible.
At the corporate rate, which now would be 20%.
But then they pay it to the individual who has to pay it at the individual rate, which is 39.6%, which means at $1 million. But a 35 would be closer to it on the numbers I just stated. So what you would do is only pay roughly 55% of that in taxes.
And only it's more than that, because if you start with $1 and charge
that,
20,
right,
then you've got 80 cents, and then you charge
I'm being nice here. You know, there's brackets and everything else. But the point is that, no, converting to a C corp to get a tax break, they very carefully jiggered this thing around. They didn't make any sense.
You're right. If you are maintaining assets in the corporate level, so you're saving for something in the future, a piece of quarrying machinery,
and you're not paying dividends,
and you have a C corp, then you're going to get a benefit here, because you're saving, and you, instead of paying the 35% taxes on it, you're paying 20% taxes on it. And then you can claw that back later when you show it's a business expense in the future.
And if you have a C corp, this is one of the Section 179 change in there. If you're regular sole proprietor or S corp or LLC, right now you can
pass through types.
You can write off new equipment you buy up to $250,000. After that, you have to amortize it. If you're going to buy some huge chunks of equipment, C corps under this law, under the proposal, it's not a law yet, will be able to deduct the entire cost of the new equipment in the year they purchase it.
Which would make sense, because a small business is, you know,
I'm talking about big business.
Yeah, a small business, it doesn't generally buy $250,000
right,
worth of stuff. So it's giving kind of the same treatment to a large business, but they're not really, because the 20% versus 25% double taxation. The reality is that the tax code has only on the surface, for the people that are least involved with it, been simplified.
And
for everybody else, it has become more complex, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just that you're going to need help doing taxes a lot more than you did before.
Have you been around long enough to remember the Economic Recovery Act of 1981? You know, that thing lasted for 5 years, and then it got torn out by the roots. And if you had rejiggered your economic activity to get tax advantages under the Economic Recovery Act of 1981, when the Tax Act of 1986 came along, you got blown out of the water.
There's another piece of the tax plan.
And that's going to happen again on this one.
This is one that it's the easiest way to look at how long it's going to be around.
5 years.
Well, it may not even be that long, because what we're looking at here, the part of this proposal is in 7 years, the doing away with the estate tax. This is the death tax. This is the thing that the current law says $5.4 million for each spouse gets to be hanging around in their estate. And above that, there's a 40% rate that goes on everything above that. This is all stuff that's already been taxed for income and everything else. So there's a 40% rate on the estate tax. This proposal doubles the exemption amount. So instead of $5.4 million, you're talking about $10.8 million per person. And in 7 years, it goes away. There is no estate tax. Well, that's been a part of probably four different tax plans in the last 20 years. Go away, estate tax. We don't like you anymore. Leave. We're going to abolish you. It never sticks. It's the baby of the Democrats. Anytime they're in power, they reinstate it.
Yeah.
And what that means is that this part of the tax proposal is likely to change rapidly.
I think, among other things, the fact that the size of the deficit this thing will probably generate will be a shocker. President Reagan pushed through the Economic Recovery Act of 1981, and the theory was we will cut taxes, raise the deficit into the stratosphere, and all the new revenue that pours in from lower taxes will more than offset the revenue we lost. And it took 4 years to realize that
it wasn't working that way.
It ain't happening. And we're going to run up so much debt, we won't even be able to comprehend it. We'll be like Venezuela or Greece.
Yeah, and that was during the height of the Cold War when we were trying to spend a lot more
right.
than the Soviets on our defense.
And so when I say five years, I give this law, if it's passed, with the deficit increase that's written, that is intentionally there.
5 years or sooner.
5 years, and it will get reversed.
Reversed or changed into something completely different.
Right. So don't bet the farm. As I've said to a number of people, and I want to talk about this too if we have time. We're almost out of time. Okay,
yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call.
Hey,
we appreciate it.
Okay, I wanted to say two things. This is Jeff. That I think are in the works right now. One of them is why the stock market may rise in the next 12 months. If we're at fair valuation right now in the stock market, and we've seen amazing increase in earnings, that amazing increase obviously can't go on forever. And
right.
the estimates out there right now are 7 to 8% increase in earnings, 6 to 8, 7 to 8, something like that, over the next 12 months. And if the price-to-earnings ratio stays rational, you would get a 6 to 8% rise in the stock market over the next 12 months, which makes perfectly good sense if the tax bill passes. As it appears today, and it adds 4% to earnings in the S&P 500, that means it's 10 to 12% increase in the stock market over the next 12 months, which is good news. That's something to look at.
Right. If it doesn't pass, do we still have that expected 6 to 8% rise in earnings?
The other thing, the other long-term, I told you, the big long-term effect, I think, of this will be debts that when we finally comprehend how big the debt is going to get under this tax concept, we will bolt in the other direction as we did in 1986. The tax law of 1986, Ronald Reagan realized that under the law he sponsored in 81, General Electric paid zero income taxes. And he said, that is fundamentally wrong. So we got the Tax Reform Act of 1986, which raised taxes. But the other thing that I think we're going to see out of this, and this is probably the biggest long-term effect, is it's going to be the catalyst, not the cause, is as the economy gets this additional stimulation over the next several years, if this tax law passes, and it will get a lot of stimulation, we don't have workers to fill the slots that would open up under the stimulus.
Right. We would have to, robotics is coming along faster, and
that's
this may be the productivity jump that we see.
Right. The combination in the ability to completely write off the cost of new purchases, no matter how big they are, by corporations, and a need to quickly produce more stuff because we have money left over that we didn't have to pay in taxes, could be the catalyst that kicks the robotic revolution that we've been waiting on for years into gear finally, and we see a tremendous jump in productivity. So it is possible that this tax cut with its great deficit increase with all the negativity that I see potentially from it, could have a profoundly positive effect if it kicks us into high-level robotics and increases our productivity and gets us rolling again.
Right. And that's kind of my take on it, too. It is likely to be a big boost to the economy if we get this tax cut. The danger is that long-term our debt as a nation is going to get a lot more. We're not decreasing our spending with the decrease in revenue. So for an individual, for our clients, for the majority of people, it's likely that everybody's going to get a tax cut. There are going to be some people that are going to have more taxes to pay, but the overall is going to be less taxes paid. And that means if we know that the future holds more debt and at some point we're going to be fed up enough with it, take the money that you get out of the lower taxes and save it somehow, invest it somehow. Otherwise, what you're looking at is you're spending debt money and the piper has to get paid.
One of the things we didn't mention is it does lower the long-term capital gains rate a bit for middle-income people. Now, if you're upper income, it doesn't. But it raised some of the brackets and changed things around. So the effect is that the distributions from your mutual funds...
I didn't read that on capital gains. I saw it as being essentially unchanged.
The 15% rate got extended to higher incomes, in essence. And the 0% rate got extended a little bit to some more people. Now, the 0% rate, most of those people don't invest anymore.
And we're about out of time. If you would like to contact us off the air, we
have a local number, 254-947-1111.
And you can reach that number toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's the 800-914 plan. If you want to go to our webpage, we encourage that. We have a newsletter there that people tell us is pretty good. We've got podcasts of this program going back quite a few years. So the webpage is thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can email us directly, jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. We do read those emails and we do use them when we're having the program. So if you enjoy and have something that you would like us to talk about, send in an email. Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
News Radio 1400 KTEN.